Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. Well, let me turn to my guest who is with us this morning via Zoom today, Superintendent Kirk Carpenter, joining us from his office in Aztec. Mr. Carpenter, good morning. Great to see you. Thanks for joining me this morning.
Good morning, Scott. Thanks again, as usual, for having us. And I know one day in the future, I'm hopeful that you and I can sit in the same room together and do this. But I do appreciate you making arrangements to make this happen each month.
You bet. Well, always look forward to it, and we're looking forward to having our conversation. So look forward to that day as well. And so to get started, maybe give us a bit of an update. Things have been moving, it seems, pretty fast and furious the last couple of weeks when it comes to our state and what we're doing and what we're trying to do to keep everybody safe. And so how does that impact Aztec schools?
Well, you know, the schools will have some impact, but nothing that will drastically change the schedule of those that are already doing a hybrid approach. We have opted as a district and did so about a week and a half ago to modify our schedule a little bit. Just based on, you know, we obviously are paying attention to what's happening with the trends as far as COVID cases and those types of things in the county. And then the governor did put on some different travel restrictions. So we had sent out a survey to our staff finding out what they were going to do during the Thanksgiving break and even Christmas break as far as travel and that, to try to get a better understanding of how that would impact our hybrid model of instruction delivery at the schools. Because if you travel, you have 14-day quarantine. And then there was another provision after we did our survey that the staff put on, that if you have people that come in from a state and you host them, that you would have to also quarantine. So all that information based off what we got from our staff and then not really understanding what the families were going to do. We did not survey the families. I think we opted to take the high road in some respects. We didn't want them to think we were trying to pry into their business. But we do know that some families will be traveling. We know families will be hosting. And so to try to do everything to keep everybody as safe as possible, we are going to a virtual model for 2 weeks after Thanksgiving break. I know Farmington has announced recently they're going to go virtual after Thanksgiving break all the way to January 19th. We're essentially going to have a similar model. However, we are bringing back our elementary kids the week before Christmas. We just feel like it's so important for our kids to have another touch point with their teachers, to have opportunity, even if it's just in our case, it's 2 days of learning for each cohort. But, you know, there's the idea of what we can do to create a normal learning environment as much as possible. And this time of year is such an important year and fun year for a lot of our elementary students. So we are going to bring them back. And we feel like that 2 week time period after Thanksgiving should give what we feel is a good incubation period, if you want to call it that. I guess that's what I'm calling it, so that we can not worry about those families that have hosted or traveled, and that'll protect everybody, hopefully. You know, the biggest thing about this, you know, we have had cases. We continue to deal with them appropriately. And, you know, to us, the schools are very clean places to be. I mean, the things that we're doing and cleaning every day. So we wanted to make sure we got people back. And then in January, just to give a closure on what we're doing with our model, we will start virtually at all sites. Of course, the secondaries are still on virtual model.
Right.
But we'll do the elementaries virtually for the first 2 weeks after Christmas break as well, for the very same reason. People may travel, but that'll give us time to let them do what they need to do or host. 14 days seems to be the magic number for some of the COVID and the contagious time period for that and the incubation period. Again, I guess I keep calling it that. But so that's what we're doing. And, you know, this was a decision that honestly originated from my office. However, we never make those decisions solely. We incorporated our wonderful administrative staff, incredible staff, principals and other cabinet members and came to an agreement that this was probably the best thing to do. And, you know, I don't know what the right decision is. I think a lot of people say, you know, you could do this, you could do that. We feel like in our district, given the resources, given all things considered, that this is absolutely the right decision, specifically for our students and their families, because that'll alleviate too a week right before Christmas of daycare. And in some cases, you know, daycare costs could be what they spend Christmas funds on. So we took a lot of things into consideration. It wasn't just one isolated issue. It was a global look at all of our stakeholders. What would be best? How can we help all people and still absolutely keep everybody safe? We'll never take shortcuts on safety.
Good to hear. And Mr. Carpenter, you mentioned that the Aztec School District has seen some cases, but it sounds to me like those have been manageable and not overwhelmed any of your buildings or staff or things like that. And is that how you see it so far?
Yes. I mean, you know, Scott, I think when we came into this year and we started back with our students, not for one second did we think we're not going to have a case. And so we got prepared for it. And our message has been prepare for it and then let's mitigate it once it happens and try to deal with it and make sure we have things in place to try to limit the amount of exposure. We had a case this past week at Kugler. We had another case at Lydia Rigby Elementary in the preschool. Of course, Kugler is not in session. However, there are teachers coming there to do their lessons virtually. And so it affected some people. And, you know, the bottom line with it is, again, we're not being in any way careless. Nobody is. No school is. But we didn't have to shut down an entire school. We had to deal with a cohort. We had to deal with some students in the buses and some of those things because of that. But, you know, we're trying to look at every avenue to keep people in cohorts so that if we do have an incident, we can limit the amount of collateral exposure, if you will, that you have that would affect the students or learning, because if you're sending students home, you're affecting families as well. And so we're trying to do everything we can to think about it up front. And if we do get a case, then hopefully it will be limited. There have been new provisions sent out by the State Department, Public Education Department, you know, about the number of what they call rapid responses. If you get four of those within 2 weeks, then you would have to shut down the entire school. So we be a situation where, and when I say rapid response, the understanding I have, and I know it's been reported differently. I was watching the news last night and they reported, and I thought that's not quite the way we understand it, and has been explained to us. But a rapid response would be if you have a case, all the people that need to get tested, as long as they get tested within a designated time, that's one rapid response. It's not like you have 10 people getting tested and that's 10 rapid responses. So
I see.
They're trying to be realistic with the approach. And so, again, we'll adjust our protocols and procedures accordingly. But things really, for the most part, have gone well. And it's not by accident that they've gone well.
Good to hear. And thank you for the clarification. And it sounds like maybe that policy is similar to what we're seeing now in more of the retail establishments with these rapid responses and the number of responses and putting these businesses maybe on a closed list for a couple of weeks if they have a number of four, I guess, is what the magic number is.
Yes, and it is. I think it mimics it almost identically. The idea, you know, the schools are the last place they want to touch, I will tell you, as far as making any changes to close.
Right.
For obvious reasons. Now, all that being said, with where we are case-wise, you know, there's going to be some county-by-county looks as far as, I know, retail and some of those things. But that's also important, I think, moving forward for secondary schools, because right now there's no engagement, any conversation of when secondary schools might be able to be back. And so that's why we've tried to send out a very important and clear message through what we talked about last month, our hashtag check in with kids campaign and some of those other things, that it's not a wave that you can ride out thinking that things are going to change. We have to maintain the mental approach that the way we're delivering our instruction right now is going to continue for the unforeseeable future. If things change, that's a great benefit. But we can't just think that things are going to change and I'll just do things better when I get back to school, because the secondary schools, there's no date right now in sight when we might even engage those students back into our schools. And honestly, for me, I'm not trying to predict, but if we have secondary schools back in session by March, I would be very happy. But I'm not thinking that would happen. So we have to maintain what we're doing, continue to get better at what we're doing, and we have to get you know, families continue with their engagement, and other families getting engaged more, that whole thing we've talked about. Because right now, we can't expect things to change. We have to expect things to stay the same. And what we need to do is find ways to get better at what we're doing on both sides of families, community, the three sides, community, and also our school, because we're continually looking at our approach and every day trying to get better at what we're doing. It's not the best case, but this is the case we have to serve students. And so we just need to take the approach that this is where we're going to be for a while. And like I said, just dig in and let's get through this and make sure learning is happening to the highest quality as possible.
Right. And I know that's a concern for you and for your teachers, Mr. Carpenter, and parents certainly, about if their kids are learning in this new environment or if they're struggling and having difficulties. Are you seeing any changes in some of the testing, the assessments that you're giving to your students on how they're doing in this strange school year that we find ourselves in?
We've seen some, but we've seen it both ways. We've seen some assessments where we were pleasantly surprised of where kids were, even given the situation that we've been going through since last March. And then there's been some cases, absolutely, where there's been some assessments where you see some achievement gap. We have no doubt there's going to be achievement gap. I think what we're trying to do is eliminate that by trying to address the essential skills in each unit of study, like all schools are doing across the state, and trying to make sure we get those key concepts taught. And that's not to say that just concentrating on those means that you know, what are you doing the rest of the year if you have a normal year? It's just literally you're triaging those essential skills that are necessary. But we are not going to change our ideas on retention for students that aren't ready to go to the next grade level. We're not going to change our ideas or thoughts on eligibility. Those are things that are sitting out there. And again, that's the important message to send, is that it's not going to be just a free year of, okay, we had all this going on, so no matter what, kids will move forward in grade levels, or kids will be eligible, or kids won't have to meet graduation requirements. That's not the case, and it should not be the case. We have a challenge in front of us, and the challenge is we are having to deliver and receive instruction differently. We're addressing those obstacles that may be in the way, and to me, again, optimist, a challenge is nothing more than an opportunity to find ways to do great things in situations which we have been given that are not the best. And that's the way we have to approach it. Everybody has to approach it. It's, again, we don't like what we have. We don't like what we're facing. But there's a lot of things we do control, and that's our attitude and our effort and our enthusiasm and what we put into the lessons on both sides of the screen. And so we just have to continue forward. And I believe 100%, I've said it before, we will be stronger, more resilient, more tolerant. And that is a key for this generation as well, because what they're dealing with is going to be a huge life lesson that will carry them forward in years to come. It's not the most pleasant. However, that's going to pay dividends for them, and it's going to pay dividends for us too, because those young people are our future leaders.
Very true. Well, and we're getting some wild pitches thrown these days, but I can hear it in your voice, Coach Carpenter, to keep your eye on the ball.
Yeah. You know, I think sometimes I get accused of having my coach face on, which is, this is all I have, so it's not pleasant either way. But I will tell you, that's what we're doing. We're just continuing to try to coach things up. We're not ignoring the obvious. I'm not ignoring the negative side of these things, but we're not going to dwell on it, because again, there's only so many things you can control. And if you take control of what you have in your hands, I believe, and again, that positive things will happen. And I'll say this too, Scott, I believe 100% that once we're through this, will there be some achievement gaps? Absolutely. Will they be detrimental where kids won't go on? No. I think kids will rebound. We have the ability after this to improve American education more than we have in years, just because of what we've had to do as far as creativity, the engagement, the delivery of lessons, use of technology, meeting kids where they're at. And those are the things we have to embrace. And I've said it many times using the word embrace. Embrace this journey. Don't rush to a destination. We can't change it. A lot of that's going to be dependent upon vaccines, dependent upon how this COVID situation goes. But if we go back to doing the same things we used to do before this in the classrooms, shame on us, because there are a lot of great things happening out there as far as engaging kids, advancing lessons at a faster pace, making them a lot richer in content. And so that those are the positives. And I don't care what situation we face, there are positives you can find in it. And if you don't take those positives and build off it, then we're going to have a pity party and we're going to be victims. We're not going to be victims. We're going to be victors of this. But we just have to be patient with it and keep working hard and make sure learning's taking place. And that's what we're trying to do. And every school district's trying to do that across the state. And there's tremendous things happening across our state. And it's tough on parents. It's not easy. I'm not ignoring any of that. However, again, there's a lot of great life lessons that can be taught in this and a lot of academic lessons as well.
Very good. And you mentioned the vaccines. We've heard news the last couple of weeks now about two potential vaccines. And so and the idea being to roll those out as quickly as possible. And so, you know, a lot of folks are maybe predicting a little bit about 2021 being the year that maybe we get our population vaccinated and things can maybe go back to some semblance of normalcy. Is that giving you hope for the future? You mentioned maybe if you can get back to in-person learning by March, you'd be pleasantly surprised. But this all kind of moves towards that direction, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, there's a lot of different thoughts. I know a lot of people have different thoughts on vaccines and those types of things. Again, maybe it's the optimism in me. I understand where countries are, where science is, and that things are not going to be done. Are they on a rush? Absolutely. But the testing and all that gives me optimism that we can move forward. And there's a lot to a plan to get students back. It's not just trending cases down. It's also trying to find ways to prevent. And the vaccination absolutely would be something. But the key there is to get everybody on board. And to get everybody on the same page as far as this is what we need to do. This is one next step. Again, unprecedented times in both medically, academically, educationally, and it's going to take many different pieces, putting them together, if you will, to complete this puzzle to get us back on a sense of what people want to call normalcy. Will things be back to normal after this? I think a lot of things will be different. They have to be different. This was a huge wake-up call for our world, not just our country or our state or our district. And so parts of what we need to do, there's a many, many different pieces, and it's going to take everybody, again, working together and doing the right things so that we can have kids come back, and we can also have the assurance that we have other kids and everybody's going to be as safe as possible. So I'm very optimistic, very excited, and hang on to that hope. But go back to the statement, hope, you know, it's not a strategy. Hope is something that gives us some optimism to look forward to in the future. But in the meantime, what we need to do is engage what we're doing right now, the way we're doing it, and make sure we understand that it may not change. If it does, it's a great benefit. And that's the way I've always looked at things. That there's a lot of what ifs, but we're not going to live on the what ifs because what ifs don't allow you to progress like you need to.
Right. You mentioned earlier this morning, Mr. Carpenter, some of the things that the Aztec School District has been doing to try to help their students, even your staff, to make sure they're doing okay during this time and to reach out and make sure they know that there are people in the district that care about them and how they're doing. Is that going pretty well? And can you tell us a little bit more about some of those efforts?
Yes. You know, the hashtag check in with kids, I'm not sure if we got to touch on that last episode, but that's one big campaign we have. We have banners, signs, we send out postcards to families, just checking in with their students. One of the statements on there is 5 at 5. Take 5 minutes at 5 o'clock to check in with your student. Have they logged in? Have they done their schoolwork? You know, again, this is a full partnership more than ever before. And that's another positive, is that family engagement with the schools is at an all-time high and needs to still be improved. And we both own parts of that. We've just recently instituted an employee assistance program. We've had it in place, but we changed the way we're doing that. But we're also providing resources to families. We're sending out messages. We're continuing with an Aztec Connects program, which is a Zoom that we do twice a week, which is designed around the social-emotional side of things to deliver to families to say, here's some tools. One of them, for example, was at the holidays. It's so stressful. So here's how you can handle that. So we are reaching out and doing a lot more to try to engage and provide more resources than ever before. And we absolutely do feel like it is working. We made adjustments in our instruction and the way we were doing things, the amount of times we're meeting with kids. We've brought kids to school board meetings and asked them, how's it going? What can we do better? What would you tell your classmates? And so we are listening to that, and not just listening, we're taking action, because you can listen all you want, but unless you take action, nothing's going to change. So again, a lot of the ways we're trying to reach out, we surveyed parents, staffs, and students after the first quarter, again, about the instruction, what's working, what's not, made some adjustments, and we'll continue to do that and refine our adjustments. Parent-teacher conferences went very, very well, even though it was virtually. The way we had engagement, I mean, that's something that we might look at in the future. Do we just do virtual because of the way we were able to engage with parents and talk with them? So there's a lot of things like that that we're looking at. We're not just trying to develop things. We did professional development for our staff, and that professional development was on delivery of instruction over virtual settings. But that wasn't designed just to help us now. We've instituted countywide professional learning communities with principals. We started the initiative here and tried to organize it. The superintendents were in agreement. And so the elementary principals across the county are meeting monthly. The secondary principals, both middle and high school, are meeting monthly to try to talk about best practices. So when we talk about our kids, I've said it many times, unless it's a Friday night, sure, we want to win on the scoreboard. Right now, we want all of our kids to win in this county. And so the amount of cooperation, collaboration going on, and those things are just absolutely beautiful to listen. The answers to all of our issues are with our people. We don't have to reach outside. We really don't. And so there's a lot of things going on, Scott, that I think we're trying to continually get better. We're listening to each other across the county. And I will tell you one thing we're looking at doing. It is a countywide teacher professional development where we can share best practices at the elementary level on delivery of virtual instruction, middle school and high school, and get teachers logged into a Zoom meeting across or several Zooms where they can go into different sessions and learn from each other. And so we are not letting this situation of COVID where we can't get together face-to-face limit our ability. Again, it's a challenge, but in it lies great opportunities to get better, and that's what's happening across this entire county.
I'm not surprised, and it's nice to hear that happening as well. Just a couple of minutes remaining together this morning, Mr. Carpenter. I want to ask you if you're hearing anything about the legislative session. The governor had said maybe that she would call a special session to deal with some issues, but, of course, the regular session is a 60-day session, and there's been some concerns about whether that could go and be effective in a virtual way. But my question is, what are you hearing, if anything, yet about the legislature and about funding? Because certainly enrollments are way different than they were a year ago, and the funding formula is based on those. And what are you hearing, I guess, about funding for school districts all across our state?
Well, you know, the one positive thing out there is the revenue for the state is up. It's not as bad as they thought it would be. Now, when I say that, there's still a big deficit. But, you know, the latest numbers I heard is maybe a $450 million deficit instead of $750 million. So that in itself is some positive news. But as far as funding for schools, you know, we are working hard as a superintendents association to have the legislature look at prior year numbers, not this year's. We're collecting that data because there's not a school. We talk about open door costs. We have to have the revenue to open our doors, and there's absolutely zero chance that we could open the doors with what we need to have if we went off this year's enrollment. And every school district in the state is facing that. So we're working hard for some legislation on that. You know, there's obviously some adjustments you have to look at, and they're looking at different types of things, like if schools have had a steady decline, do you take that into consideration as far as the numbers and put a factor in? But something is absolutely going to have to be different. The biggest thing that we are advocating for is that the legislature does not touch cash balances. They did a cash balance drawback many years ago. I think I'm probably the poster child. I'm fighting that issue. But cash balances in districts are going to be utilized for many things. I mean, there's a lot of revenue lost in districts when you don't have athletics to help pay for other athletics. So in the event we get athletics going, that's a cost out of cash balance for those districts that have it. Many districts don't. So there's absolutely some things that we're hearing that may happen. I've said it many times. I'll say it again. If the legislature tries to come back and take money out of cash balances, to me, that would be one of the biggest crimes against kids ever, only because we are going to need that funding to get us back to where we were. We're going to need that funding for a lot of things lost. And while those balances may be elevated at this time, it's because we're not paying subs out of operational. We're not doing a lot of things. And so there are going to be some battles. But I think that we are getting some good movement, and there's been meetings with the LESC, the Legislative Education Study Committee, and also the Legislative Finance Committee, where they understand where we're at. And so it's just a matter of sitting down, and more than ever before, like we've talked about, we are going to have to work together and be reasonable, but we also have probably the toughest budget ever coming forward as far as what we need to do in our state because of the deficit that already sits there. And so it's going to take some creative planning by those people that are far smarter than me down there, but it's also going to take people not going after certain things in school districts and working with school districts and have the policymakers listen to the educators more than ever on what this has done and how it's going to have residual effects for years going forward, not just next year.
Very good. Well, Kirk Carpenter, I certainly appreciate your time and speaking with me this morning, and we will get together again next month and see how things look in December. But thanks for your time this morning.
Scott, thank you. And just real quick, just a happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Regardless of what we're going through, there's many things to be thankful for. So I hope that the families can sit together and be thankful for what they do have. I know I'm thankful for many things, and I wish you and everybody at San Juan College as well, and we appreciate the partnership we have with you. A happy Thanksgiving, and thanks for everything, Scott.
Thank you, and this year has taught us a lot of things, including what we are most thankful for. So thanks for that, Mr. Carpenter. We'll talk to you again in December. Stay safe.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Will do. That is Superintendent Kirk Carpenter, Aztec School District, my guest here on KSJE. Back with more coming up in just a moment. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.